And good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever and whenever you're listening to us in this great big world of the World Wide Web / Internet. We are, again, the last three guys to do a podcast coming at you here on SoundCloud. I'm John Morgo, along with
Daniel Bolton.
And Leon Brown.
Good to have you with us today. We're going to get right into things. It's our last episode that we're going to do before Christmas vacation. We're going to take the week off next week, and we just wanted to make sure that everything is all taken care of, squared away. We are discussing the things that we need to discuss over this hour. It's a jam-packed hour, so we're going to get right to it. Our first guest, and our only guest, I'm sorry, happens to be the illustrious John Nelson. He has many hats, but the hats we're most concerned with is the Georgia Public Broadcasting coverage of the Georgia High School Championships down over at the Benz during the midweek Mercedes-Benz, and of course his duties with the Atlanta United Soccer Club. John, how are you?
Illustrious, huh?
Yeah, I figured I'd toss that in there.
No, it's kind of weird not having anything to call, although I will take the sleeping in part on Saturday and Sunday after this past week. I will take it and run.
I'm sure you will. You had a very busy Tuesday and Wednesday. That must have been interesting, doing those games at the Benz on a Tuesday and a Wednesday as opposed to your normal Friday and Saturday.
Well, you know, with the success of Atlanta United, the GHSA had figured out at the beginning of the year that they needed a contingency plan. And sure enough, with Atlanta United making it to MLS Cup, that meant that with about a week and a half notice, everything from the GHSA slid. And right. So coaches had an extra couple of days to prepare, and GPB had an extra couple of days to prepare. And so made sure that everything was in line for the games at the Benz. But it was still eight games in about 38 hours. And when it was all over, John, I did my customary leaving the stadium, heading to Waffle House, getting my grilled cheese wheat on two triple order hash browns, and that was pretty much what I ate for the next day and a half.
Well, that's good. That's good. And it must have been great. Well, first of all, last year the GHSA really didn't have a plan, so it must have been great that this year they actually had one.
Well, and you know, necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. So.
Right.
After what happened last year where they just put it back to all of the home sites, you know, home team on the side of the bracket got the home game. That was why we ended up doing Colquitt and North Gwinnett. Mm-hmm. So and then we had the live look-ins from our friends at the NFHS Network so we could keep an eye on all the other games that were going on. But because of what happened last year with the weather and everything, then they got it all figured out. But, you know, at the same time, you now add weather to Atlanta United. And so, you know, it could be an extra couple of days, but at least there's something in place now. And Robin Hines, the executive director of the Georgia High School Association and the GHSA, are ready for whatever comes.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about the games themselves. The 7A game, the last game, Milton and Colquitt County. Milton finally gets the victory for Fulton County, and that must have been it. Colquitt came in as the odds-on prohibitive favorite. Milton wasn't given much of a chance, but Milton really got that victory in the end. It kind of surprised a lot of people.
Well, and when you look at what Adam Clack has done, I mean, for Milton, it was the first time in school history that they'd ever made it to the last game of the year. And what they did is they relied on Jordan Yates. And the way that it lined up is they would put as many receivers in the pattern as humanly possible. And a lot of times they would run a four stack on one side of the offensive line or the other. And then Yates would almost treat it as an RPO. And a lot of times he would tuck and run, and the offensive line cleared the way. When you've got a guy like Paul Teo, who's 6'5", 330, who's heading to Clemson, you know, it's a good guy to run behind. And so they clamped down on the running game of Colquitt County and kind of let them do whatever they needed to do between the 20s. But they forced J.C. Harden into making decisions with the passing game and clamped down on the run. And it was a sound defensive strategy and rode Jordan Yates to a win.
Yeah, and Lee County also gets a good victory. And then that's a good win for Lee County to get a title victory in 6A down for those folks in South Georgia.
And they went pillar to post, and as one of the great orators of this era, a gentleman by the name of Richard Fleer says, to be the man, you've got to beat the man.
Right.
And with Lee County winning last year, they were the man coming in, and no one knocked them off, and it was a region rival in Northside that did it. But the one thing that stuck with me about the 6A game was just the suffocating defense that Lee County had, and now they're getting the opportunity to play one more on the 22nd in the postseason showcase, and they're entertaining, I want to say, Our Lady of Good Counsel out of Maryland down in Leesburg next Saturday.
Hey, John, this is Danny. Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. Go for it. Just speak up a little bit for me and get a little closer to John. I know I don't know how close you guys are at the table, but if you could hug John Morgo for me this entire time, a nice big thick embrace when you're talking in the mics, that would be tremendous.
All right, I'm turning up his mic as far as it can go.
There you go.
I just hugged him. So,
atta
boy. For you. How shocked were you, just on a scale of 1 to 10, how shocked were you that Milton was able to defeat Colquitt County? For me, I think it was about maybe a 7 or an 8 because I expected Colquitt to do
well. I mean, for me, it was probably a little less than that just because we'd had the opportunity to see them against Lowndes the previous week. And if you play it back into the notion of having those extra couple of days to prepare, I think that the Archer tape was probably what a lot of folks looked at and will look at going forward when it comes to Rush and his offense, because for 8 straight quarters, 2 straight years, Archer did not allow an offensive touchdown for Colquitt County, and it took overtime and a blocked PAT for Colquitt to beat Archer to get to the last game of the year. So I think that the tape got out, and they watched what Archer did and what Andy Dyer did in constructing a game plan to keep Colquitt off the board, and it took 5 field goals from a kicker like Ryan Fitzgerald, who is all planetary, and that was how they ended up getting to overtime and getting the Duke.
Exactly. But probably the big story, at least from an inspiring kind of thing, route that was going on, is definitely what happened with Bainbridge. 3-5, four seed going into the playoffs, and they roll everything through the playoffs, beat a lot of good teams. They beat Buford, and they win the tournament. How much of an inspiring story is Bainbridge?
Well, that's a great story, and if you combine that with the fact that one of the storylines that we paid attention to was Bainbridge was hit just as hard with Hurricane Michael as a lot of the teams in Southwest Georgia, and we spent some time down in Seminole County because Donaldsonville was pretty much ground zero for that impact. But Bainbridge went through the same things, and the game that they played in the regular season, the region game with Warner Robins, was after a bye, but it was right after Hurricane Michael. So pretty much Coach Jeff Littleton ended up just basically saying, okay, who can make it? Who can make it to practice? Who can get on the bus so we can go up to Warner Robins? Warner Robins beat him 38-0, but just with everything that had gone on with Hurricane Michael, it wasn't the same team. And so I understood the whole idea of being 3-5 and then running the table. You knock off 4 top 10 teams to get to the last game of the year. And we had had this discussion both on the air and off, and we still have the discussion days later, that this game against Warner Robins that went 3 overtimes before it was done was probably one of the greatest high school football championship games that all of us as a lot, you know, myself, Matt Stewart, our executive producer, Steve Graham, coordinating producer, Kevin Gerke, all of us who talk on it on a weekly basis, that it was one of the best championship games we've ever seen, regardless of classification. And if you add up all the time that we've covered high school football, you're talking, you know, probably about 700 years.
Exactly.
But no, it was a great effort by Bainbridge, and I know that a lot of folks, especially in Central Georgia, are still concerned about the penalty call and points on the board and all that kind of stuff. And if you read the papers in Central Georgia, you can get that background there too.
Right.
But it was a tremendous game, and you just take your hat off to Bainbridge and Jill Littleton for everything that happened this year.
We're speaking with John Nelson from Georgia Public Broadcasting and Atlanta United about what we saw during the middle of the week at the Georgia High School Championships. John, I asked Sam Crenshaw this last week, and I'm going to ask you now. This kind of side story with Bainbridge, when they beat Buford in the quarterfinals, prevented Buford from getting into the semis, snapped that streak where Buford had been at least in the semis 12 straight years, their head coach John Ford resigned or was fired. What do you make of that situation?
I'm still trying to piece it together more than anything.
Like all of us.
And admittedly, for me, it was a bit of a surprise that after 2 seasons that John would go. But, you know, right now I'm just taking it at, you know, at face value, not reading anything into it one way or the other, that after two seasons, for one reason or another, John Ford has decided to leave Buford. And I know that Buford is basically turning this into about as regional a coaching search as humanly possible when it comes to John's successor. And I want to see who the next guy is and who's going to take the helm at Buford, because it is one of those jobs that people gravitate toward for one reason or another. But, you know, with John Ford, I want to see where John ends up next, and I want to see who ends up taking over for him.
And you look at the person who John took over for, Jess Simpson. He is definitely rising up the charts over at Mark Ritt's crew down in Miami. I think he was either associate or assistant defensive coordinator, so we want to congratulate him on that promotion. But, John, let me ask you something about the, again, the other games that we haven't touched on. Blessed Trinity winning consecutive down in 4A, and then the single-A games, Eagles Landing, another convincing victory. And I believe, boy, that was it was just an exciting game between Irwin and Clinch County. I was watching a little bit of that game at work, and it was just going back and forth between them. Talk about which individual player impressed you the most.
Wow. Well, let's see. Obviously, you're drawn to a guy like Keaton Mitchell from Eagles Landing Christian. You know, when you score just south of 50 touchdowns in a season, obviously eyes gravitate toward him, and you get a quarterback like Braden Rush. It's some quality there. You look at Tresman Marshall from Clinch County, who's heading to the SEC at the next go-around. So, obviously, you look at someone like that and want to see how he's going to be at the next level. You look at an Elijah Hussey, who was quarterbacking at Heard County and, you know, got them to a state championship for the first time ever. And you can't say enough about what Tim Barron was able to do after they lost early in the year to Hapeville Charter on Football Fridays in Georgia Facebook Live. And then they lose to Rockmart 33-0, and they turn it around in the final. You look at Blessed Trinity, and obviously you're looking at a guy like Steel Chambers. You're looking at J.D. Bertrand. And obviously, you know, those two guys you look at. And then, you know, for Cartersville, I want to look at T. Webb for his senior year. I want to see what he's going to be up to. And then, I mean, that's just really scraping the surface of it all. I mean, obviously, you look at Colquitt and Lee and Bainbridge and Warner Robins and all those other schools that are in there. There's a lot of good stories. And then you look at Cedar Grove, you stare at Jaden Hazelwood, because lesson learned with Jaden Hazelwood is that you have to bracket him for the entire 48 minutes. And yep, the one time that coverage comes over late from Peach County was the time he was solo covered. Happened to be the last play, pretty much the last play of the game, and that's how Cedar Grove gets their second title in 3 years. So there's always a lot of star power. Jeff Fisher, who runs High School Football America, has an algorithm that he puts together on a yearly basis, and this was the first year that Georgia popped in at number 3 in his algorithm for high school football talent. And when you're at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for 2 days, you get to see a whole lot of it.
Exactly. I was about to ask you about Jaden Hazelwood for Cedar Grove. How important is it that Cedar Grove does have that 2 years in a row, especially when you consider what DeKalb County has done and how it hasn't really been doing it in the championships the last couple of years?
Well, and the thing about Cedar Grove, John, is that you're looking at a team that just is kind of quietly going about its business as a AAA school.
Right.
I know that a lot of folks are staring at 5A, 6A, the 7A when it comes to DeKalb County schools, and DeKalb County took it on the chin in round one this particular year. And, you know, when you lose to Central Georgia and Northside Warner Robins, if you're a Tucker, and that's how it ends up with Region 1, you know, with Coffee making it through and all that, and knocking off Stevenson, I want to say. But I think it says more than one thing. I think it says what South Georgia and Central Georgia football are on a yearly basis, and I also think that it says that it's cyclical. Sometimes you have a team like a Tucker and Brian Lamar who will make it through with their wing tee, and they'll go toe to toe with a McEachern and you know, play a game where, you know, you take the over. But I just think that this year, when it comes to the higher classifications, it was Central Georgia's time.
Right.
In Region 5 AAA, you're looking at Cedar Grove, who's going up against a Lovett and a Westminster and so on. So they're just kind of getting to go about their business against a lot of other schools that are inside the perimeter.
Yeah, I happened to call Cedar Grove's demolition of Lovett during the season. And Jaden Hazelwood, yes, he did get a touchdown, but it was more very team-oriented. There was a lot of people in factor.
Yep.
I'm thinking of Robert Pop Jones III, who their star running back, who did very well in that. Now, John, I'm going to ask you one more thing, and then we're going to switch gears and go to Atlanta United. I follow you on Twitter, and I encourage everyone to do it, OSG Nelson, that's your Twitter handle. It seems to me that the one thing you look forward to every year is your South football caravan. Is that as much fun to actually go on as your tweets have represented?
Well, yeah, we call it the Southern Swing, and that was just the title that we kind of poked in a couple of years ago. And for those who, you know, think that TV is all glitz and glamour and stuff.
Right. We know better.
What that is 3 days of going from point to point in a van, hopping out of the van, borrowing a coach for about 15 minutes, hopping back in the van, and going to the next stop. So I did the math this year, and in a three-day period, we hit 22 different stops, whether we're talking to media personalities or coaches or what have you. And so, I mean, it's fun to go down there because you get to see everybody. And, you know, you haven't seen them since, you know, the end of this season, and right. You don't get to see them again until August. But it's fun to go into the communities and catch up with coaches and see how everything's ramped back up. But, yeah, Southern Swing on a yearly basis is the first chance for, you know, GPB to get out into the community outside the Atlanta area and catch up with everybody. And it's, like I said, it's just good to see old friends and good to meet new ones.
Yeah, it seems like that if there's one criticism of GPB sports, that's it, that you don't get out – down to the middle of Georgia, down to South Georgia, but you do make that point to get at least one game or two games down there in that area.
Yeah, and a lot of it obviously comes down to budget and advertising and all that kind of stuff. And so we're really fortunate when communities can help out and, you know, help us and meet our budgetary, you know, ideas that are a part of how much it costs to put a game on the air, because usually what happens is if we leave a certain radius, then our budget basically doubles.
Right.
And that means another day of the satellite truck and the production team and the travel and the hotel and all those other aspects of it. So,
and that's something a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah, and so, you know, we try to do our best to make sure that we've got a budget going in where we can make a trip and kind of push boundaries a little bit. This year we started off with Carrollton and Rome, and then we went down late in the year for Lowndes and Colquitt, and so it was fun to see everybody down in Moultrie when we had that kind of a chance.
All right, John. Well, we're going to switch gears now. Again, John Nelson is our guest, talking a little GPB and Georgia High School sports. Now we're going to switch to his other job, and that is with the Atlanta United, more specifically Atlanta United 2, their squad, which used to play in Colray Field. Now they're going to switch over, go to Fifth Third Bank Stadium or down in Kennesaw for their season next season. Even though this squad was growing up in the shadow of Atlanta United, how was it calling their games?
Oh, it was an absolute blast because you get to tell the story from the beginning. And I think really if you look at ATLU TD 2, they were fast-tracked because of all of the development that they have at the academy level and all of the young talent that they have that are homegrowns. There was the plan all along to create ATLU TD2, but because of just the sheer numbers and the need to get these guys game ready, then that was why ATLU TD2 came online, and then they played up at Colray. And, you know, you have to, you know, thank the folks up at Colray with the Stripers and, you know, getting a field prepared for both baseball and soccer. But, I mean, if you look at the folks like an Andrew Carlton, who as the season came on in the USL, you could see the light come on a little bit. And you could see his defensive play pick up in addition to his distribution of the ball. A Miles Robinson, who got quality minutes with Atlanta United. He got quality minutes at the beginning of the year working the back line with some experienced guys like Andrew Wheeler-Amanu and Sean Nicklaw and A.J. Cochran and John Gallagher. And you see the experience that Lagos Kunga gets, that Chris Goslin gets, that Robinson gets and Carlton gets, and that's why the USL team is there.
Right.
So when these guys have this multiplicity of schedules, whether we're talking Open Cup or now CONCACAF Champions League and USL play and MLS play, that wherever they're needed, they can take the philosophy that is Atlanta United's on-field philosophy and put it wherever it's needed. I mean, that's with CONCACAF Champions League coming up, you're going to need to have 22 to 25 guys who are ready to play either in Costa Rica or at Mercedes-Benz or on the road or at Fifth Third Bank Stadium. So, no, it was great to be able to see the light come on for a lot of these younger players and see them grow and develop into what Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra and Tata Martino want them to be in that system.
And John, did you get the feeling that Arthur Blank was as hands-on with Atlanta UTD 2 as he is with the other club, or was it another managerial system?
No, it was the system with Scott Donnelly and Tata Martino, because Scott Donnelly and Tata Martino and Tony Annan from the academy, there would be that once a week gathering of Bocanegra, Eales, Annan, Martino, Donnelly, where they would all be at a table and they would discuss things just to make sure that everyone is on the same page from the academy side, from the second team side, from Atlanta United side. So you have the academy, USL, MLS, all working in concert, doing the same things on the pitch so that the same lessons are learned and that everyone is going forward at the same rate and then making sure that the message is getting put out on multiple levels, and that the output is always going to be there too.
Well, there's no question that Atlanta is now the mecca of United States soccer with the Atlanta United MLS Cup victory and everything. But in your opinion, John, what is the next step for this franchise to do in terms of cementing its hold on the Atlanta market?
Well, the Atlanta market, I mean, it's just continue to do what you're doing. I think that with this particular market, it is y'all means all. That's right. The bottom line. And it is the most inclusive soccer environment that I think I've ever come across. And I think that the fact that it is as inclusive as it is really shows what it can be to the rest of the U.S. soccer community, because not every soccer community is inclusive. And there is some exclusion there. But I think that what you've seen when you go to a tailgate, when you go to the Gulch, when you go to a match, that you think of the first couple of cheers that you hear, vamos, 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 ATL, and, you know, we are the A from way down south. That speaks to the fabric of what the Atlanta United fan base is. I mean, it is a club, and it is growth. So just, they've been hitting all the right notes so far, and the bottom line is, you just keep doing what you're doing, and it rubs off and continues to grow and grow and grow. It wouldn't surprise me if there were more full house games next season where you were exposing it to the upper bowl, where I think there were only 7 or 8 games this past year where you opened up the entire stadium and you opened up the upper deck. So I think for an Atlanta United standpoint, just keep doing what you're doing. And really for the global brand that a lot of folks want to work on, I think that it's getting through CONCACAF Champions League. And if you win CONCACAF Champions League, which is something no MLS team has ever done,
right,
then you go to the Club World Cup, which is something no MLS team has ever done. So it's just continuing to build that brand for the team and making sure that everything is still going forward.
Hey, John, I have a question for you. It's Daniel again.
Are you hugging John Morgan?
I am still hugging him, man. I am, like, real close to him right now.
He had onions for dinner.
I did.
Attaboy.
Tata Martino, of course, he's out. As Atlanta United coach going back to coach the Mexican national team, do you by any chance know what the next step could be for Atlanta United as far as coaching?
Well, there are a couple of names out there, and right now you're going to need to bring a coach in pretty quickly.
Yes.
Because once again, you're looking at an accelerated training camp, probably starts about 10 days to 2 weeks before, because your first game for this new coach is February 19th.
Absolutely.
So we're talking, what, 2 months away?
2 months away.
Yep. On the upside. No one said there'd be math on this show, so I'm just trying to do my best.
No, you're right.
So I'm looking at about 2 months, and so I know that Darren Eales has put a timetable out there as to when he wants to bring somebody in. And it's going to have to fit the philosophy. You're going to have to want to be out there in the community. You're going to want to have to be accessible and amenable to the press and do all the public things and all of that, but still at the same time take the philosophy on the pitch and move it forward. And yeah, and I know that, and everybody knows that with a new head coach, you're going to have different philosophies. You're going to want to bring in your guys, and you're going to want to do that. So I think that the first step is making sure that, you know, we figure out who this new coach is going to be. You know, could it be Guillermo Barros Schelotto? Could it be Gabriel Heinze, could it be a couple of other guys? That's a distinct possibility. We just don't know yet, but that's going to have to come in pretty soon. And then, okay, so if you've got a coach, then who are the dudes you're bringing in? So I think that that's the thing, and it's going to have to be done on the hop, as they say.
Exactly. Well, John, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you so much for agreeing to spend some time with us on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, talking soccer, talking Georgia high school football. We'll be sure to have you on as later on as we get closer to 2019 MLS season. Appreciate it, John.
Be well, guys, and continue to hug John Morgan.
I will, man. Big hug. Thanks, John.
All right, that was John Nelson. We could have gone a lot longer with that, but yeah. I wanted Leon to actually talk things over, because I know Leon's not Leon's got his strengths. I'm not saying he doesn't, but Georgia high school football is not one of them. So now we're going to talk about Leon's strength, and that is the Los Angeles Chargers.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, my guys are on the way to being 13-3, which would be the first time since 2009. You know, I'm definitely excited, you know, especially being that, you know, I have an uncle named Ricky McElwee, who lives in Kansas City. Matter of fact, my uncle Jim as well, too. And, you know, I'm going to get on the phone and troll him after we get off this show. But we haven't been 13-3 since 2009, when we lost to the Jets in the second round of divisional playoffs, you know, in stunning fashion. I was on the phone with Daniel as that was happening almost about 10 years ago. Yeah. So, you know, but that win that the Chargers had on Thursday night was probably like the largest win, in my opinion, of the year.
Exactly. Yeah, I think so too.
You know, I mean that. I mean, you know, to see two pretty much arguably the best teams in the NFL right now, and I'm not leaving in New England out whatsoever or Houston, but two of the teams that are pretty much favored to represent the AFC in a Super Bowl. You know, go at it, and then for the game to live to hype. You know, for the Chargers to have that comeback win. You know, and this is really huge. I'm real happy for Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates. Because Phillip Rivers, you know, he was part of that big draft class of the Ben Roethlisbergers and the Eli Mannings, and they all have something to show for their careers. But you know, Phillip Rivers, who has over 300 passing touchdowns, 50,000 yards, no Super Bowl.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's right. You know. Let me ask you this. Since this is a validated certification or petrified dilapidation episode of Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, the San Diego Chargers are the most dangerous team right now, as of
especially
today.
Since they're in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles Chargers
of San Diego.
Yeah.
We have our own Stephen A. Smith right here.
Right. Listen, and I have it here on the notes, the San Diego Chargers. I can't help it, man. Hey. I can't help it. They're the most dangerous team in the NFL. Is that a validated argument?
Absolutely.
Or is that a petrified
I think my team is very validated. Chargers have validated themselves, you know, because we're looking at big.
And dangerous, what I mean by dangerous is that either one or two or five or six, they can do some damage in the playoffs, regardless on what seed they'll be in. Because right now they're sitting at five. Right. They don't own the tiebreaker against Kansas City.
Right.
They're sitting there. So, go ahead.
Oh, that definitely validates us. We're talking about two back-to-back wins over divisional leaders. You know, us beating Pittsburgh in shocking fashion. You know, and then us coming back and winning against Kansas City. I mean, if you look at validation, we got to put that big Charger boat right next to it for right now in the Webster Dictionary.
Now, do you think the Chargers can get the AFC West title away from Kansas City?
If Kansas City loses another game, which I don't really see happening, I mean, you know.
Where they have Denver, I know they end with Oakland. I know that.
Who's
that?
Seattle,
okay.
Right. So,
They would have to get that Seattle game out of the way. I think they'll beat Oakland.
Right.
But they'll have to that game at Seattle is going to be a tough one, and I think that is a Sunday night game. I think they flexed it to Sunday night.
It could be possible. You know, it's up to Kansas City, but we also have to we have to finish strong as well too. You know, I believe we have Baltimore coming up.
Baltimore Saturday night.
Right. And that team is as hungry as any other team that we know of, because them like us.
Then you end with Denver.
Right. Yeah. And Denver always plays the stuff, and we have a bit of a conversation to have with them.
Well, the interesting part about the last two games of your schedule is that the Ravens and the Broncos are still fighting for that last playoff
Absolutely.
Spot.
So those conversations are going to be very interesting.
Right,
and
right.
Especially in light of what's going on right now between the dogfight that we're witnessing between Pittsburgh and New England.
Right. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know, which that can, that's like, that can go either way.
Right now, Pittsburgh with a 17-10 lead over the Patriots.
At 2 minutes and 30 seconds with Brady with the ball in a two-minute drill that we've seen so many times.
Yeah, we have seen this. We've seen this movie a lot.
Right.
Yeah. We saw the extras of the DVD.
Yeah, especially with Brady being 11-2 against the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, this game has major playoff implications for the Steelers. But in reference to the Chargers, you know, we definitely have to handle business against Baltimore. But in you know, on a positive note, you know, historically speaking, the Chargers are like one of the all-time best teams, at least within like the last, 13 years in December?
Because at one point in time in a five-year stretch, I believe they had averaged 11 wins a year.
Absolutely. I think we only lost one time in December that I can remember.
Right. Right.
And speaking of Seattle, they're right now entering overtime with San Francisco tied at 23.
Nice.
So that is interesting. Let me throw this topic out there. Atlanta, with their most complete victory of the season, 40-14 over the Arizona Cardinals. Two questions. Number one, are the Cardinals just that bad? And number two, do you want to see Atlanta tank?
The first question is yes, Arizona is that bad.
Okay.
They can get at you on defense, but offensively, I don't understand. They're dead last in the league in total offense.
And how is that possible with Larry Fitzgerald?
But they can't protect nobody.
Okay.
They're hurt on the front line. They've had 22 different rotations on the offensive line this year. They've committed alone 37 penalties. So that's kind of a tough thing. And we're talking about like 22 holding penalties and 15 false starts. So this team is struggling on the offensive line. They can't protect Rosen or any quarterback at that matter who's been in the league, who's been in the game for them. So that's what they struggled at. And of course, we saw that today against Atlanta. They just could not protect Josh Rosen.
No.
He got sacked 7 times today. So, and 3 turnovers before us. One was a pick 6 from Deion Jones, which looked great, I thought.
Yes.
And I mean, a lot of them, they looked great. Grady Jarrett was in his face the entire time today.
And with all the negative press that the Atlanta defense has gotten, well-deserved in my opinion, but in terms of that, again, is as we said, Arizona's offensive line, we just found the one offensive line worse than Atlanta's.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we did. Yeah, they're god-awful
on
that offensive line, and injuries does have a lot to do with it, but man, I mean, you're in the National Football League, man. If your job is to protect your quarterback and you can't do it,
right?
I don't care what level you are. I don't care if you're a third stringer. You get plugged in there. You're supposed to know the situations. You're supposed to know how to protect your quarterback and how to open up gaps in the run game.
So what do you think is the bigger story of this Cardinals and Atlanta game? You know, the fact that Larry Fitzgerald, the great Larry Fitzgerald, you know, was held just 26 yards.
And we talked about this either a week ago or 2 weeks ago about why doesn't Larry Fitzgerald leave. And the conclusion we drew is he likes Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They love him.
I guess the weather must be good. Or the fact that, you know, you got Matt Ryan, who had 8 different targets, 7 of which had for a first down or better.
You know what? I'm going to say this. This looked like today, and let's take out how bad Arizona is, okay? But this looked like the Super Bowl team we had a couple of years ago, where we was beating you up on the defensive side. Vic Beasley was getting at it today. Brian Poole, he did a great job today. Grady Jarrett was the guy that we thought he could be. Deion Jones runs a pick 6 back, right?
Right.
Robert Alford did a great job today. Notice that, right?
Yep.
We didn't have too many penalties. We didn't turn the ball over, you know. Matt Ryan looked like Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's thrown for 30 touchdown passes and just 6 interceptions.
Quietly, yeah, Matt Ryan was Matt Ryan. He's been Matt Ryan all season. He's had a great campaign that has unfortunately been overshadowed by the injuries to the defense, by the drops of his receivers, and by the inefficiency of the offensive line. And how Atlanta is it for the Falcons to get their biggest win of the year in terms of points spread and yet have this be the weekend that they're formally eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Just on a sour note, right? But I think we all knew that from last week when they lost. So, I mean, you know, it's a big time deal there. And, but you guess what? They're going to get a high draft pick. What is it? I think I heard it probably be the fifth.
Could be depending on what we see in these last 2 weeks, last two games with Carolina and Tampa Bay, both on the road. And to get to my second point, should they have tanked? I don't think so.
No, I don't either.
Only because what the Falcons need, you can get regardless in that top 10.
Right.
You can get a good lineman.
Absolutely.
You can get a good lineman as easily at number 3 as you can at number 5 or even number 6. And maybe Atlanta can trade down a little bit in the top 10, pick up a pick maybe at the bottom end and get another lineman, because I think everybody agrees that's what the Falcons should focus on. I think we're fine in the skill position.
Right. So. Yeah, I think we are too. In fact, I think that we're fine in majority of the places. I think Atlanta's problem this year was execution and their lack of effort this year. I think that that's what caused it, especially after losses. They just did not know how to pick themselves up after losses, and that's what happens when you go on losing streaks. I mean, ask Carolina. Carolina's having a problem right now, and I'm not sure why they're having that problem.
Mm-hmm.
They can't defend anyone. Cam Newton is not being the Cam Newton that we know he can be, you know?
Right.
They've lost, what, 5 or 6 straight? I believe it's 6 straight.
Yeah, they're in Magic Mountain, Splash Mountain, coming off the, you know, the big drop that you take the picture on. Yeah. They're
exactly.
in free fall.
Yeah, they're in free fall.
They're in free fall, and boy, it's a lot of rumbles, I'm pretty sure, going around that franchise as far as what they're going to do with Ron Rivera. So. Yeah. I don't know.
I look at it like he's produced so many. You know, I think Carolina has been very consistent. I don't think Cam. Mm-hmm. I think Cam is hurt.
Yeah, you know, I do too.
Yeah, we're looking at the loss of Greg Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't call like the Atlanta Falcons' victory today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Atlanta is petrified. I don't think they're petrified at all. Like you said, you know, you got Matt with 30 versus 6.
Right.
You know,
Julio
I mean,
Jones leads the league in receiving yards.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's got a couple of leaks on defense that need to plug.
We got injured on defense.
Absolutely. There's no need to throw the baby out the bathwater curse to Atlanta. You know, it happens. You know, a couple of unexpected injuries. I believe it's like they're not the Packers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not the Packers. You know, where they look like their team, they're going to have to do some type of overhaul.
Yeah.
This is bad.
Going back to Atlanta, going back to the draft, John, there's two guys. If they finish with the 5th overall pick, there are two guys in that draft that I would not mind looking at and getting if you're the Atlanta Falcons that will boast that defense. Ed Oliver, Nick Bosa.
Okay.
You get those two guys can get after it. And if we had one of those guys either at the edge, because Oliver, I believe, is I think you could switch Ed Oliver out. You can put him on the defensive line, or you can put him on the edge, or you can put him in the interior. Mm. Nick Bosa's more of an edge rusher. You get Nick Bosa on the other side of Vic Beasley, if Vic Beasley is still here next year. That's, boy, you're talking about trouble. That's big time trouble. Big time trouble for any kind of offensive line that would have to deal with him.
Yeah, Ed Oliver out of Houston and Nick Bosa out of Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
For those two. And speaking of a petrified Gabe, look what happened to the Cowboys today.
And that was like the first shutout loss in
2003.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, since 2003, guys. I don't know. I couldn't even remotely tell you what happened. Here's a team that was on a 5-game winning streak, including beating us.
Right.
They beat Philadelphia. I mean, these guys were on a run and looked like, and they humbled the Saints, you know. And then they looked like what my man Stephen A. Smith says, an accident waiting to happen, right?
Yes.
That's man. What they looked like.
Now, does this open a door for Washington?
It does if Washington – did Washington win today?
They did. They beat Jacksonville.
It still does. It does. It even kind of opens the door for Philadelphia.
Well, Philadelphia's got to get a victory
but
tonight.
But they've got to get a victory tonight.
Over LA, yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Good luck.
And you know, at the same time, though, unless Dallas collapses, they still have a one-game lead in their division, despite
really
Washington
two
winning.
Because they got the
tie.
They got the tiebreaker. Yeah,
yeah, so they
head to head.
There is slight margin for error.
So so basically, Dallas has to lose two, and Washington has to win two.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't think that's going to happen.
And Carolina's going to get knocked out tomorrow night. That's for sure. And then,
you guys think they're going to get knocked out?
You think? What are they playing? The Saints.
I know.
Yeah,
that's a division. It's a divisional
game. I'm gonna call an upset.
You think Carolina's gonna beat the Saints?
I think Carolina. I just don't think that they're. I don't know what's wrong with them, but they're gonna have to snap out of this at some point of time. And I think Monday night at Carolina at home
on prime time.
On prime time, I think Carolina could go in there and beat the Saints. I think the Saints are right now coasting. They understand what they have against them. Mm. They understand that the only thing they're really fighting for is that number one seed.
Right.
Which I believe this is a certified statement. The Saints have to go. The NFC has to go through New Orleans, go through the Superdome in order for them to get to the Super Bowl. I don't think that if the Rams have home field advantage, then they have to meet the Rams in LA. I don't think the Saints can beat the Rams in LA.
If the Saints
time around.
If the Saints lose tomorrow night, that would be like the second big game that they lost. They would be the most scrutinized 13-3 team.
losing to Dallas in such a convincing fashion, then losing to Carolina.
Oh.
And New England has just lost their second straight game.
All right.
Pittsburgh just picked up a fourth down stop, so the Steelers will go to 8-5-1. New England will drop to 9-5.
And this would be the first time since the year 2010? Eight, that they finished. What was the year that they had Matt Castle as quarterback?
2000.
Yeah, Brady got hurt.
Or nine. Yeah, that's when Brady
got hurt.
Brady tore his ACL against the Kansas City Chiefs.
This would be the first time that many children have ever seen New England finish 11-5. And I'm thinking, I don't think they're going to lose the rest of the year, but I'm saying like no less than 12-4.
Well, and check this out. I don't think New England has clinched a playoff berth yet. They haven't clinched the division.
No, they haven't clinched the division because Miami's two games behind with two to play.
Yep.
Oh. And they've already finished with the Dolphins, so I assume the next 2 weeks are the Bills and the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure who Miami will have to end with. Miami will have to end with Buffalo. And I'm not sure who they play next week.
So I know tomorrow everybody's going to jump on it, but we're going to be the first ones to do it.
Okay.
So we're going to talk Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know, with going 11-5.
You know, nice.
But potentially going 11-5, ladies and gentlemen. You know, is Tom Brady getting too old?
43 years old? Yeah, I think he is.
You know, he's 11-5, everybody. Oh, my God. You know, he's about to finish 11-5.
I mean, he doesn't look it, you know.
At all.
No.
But
he could go two more years if he wanted to.
Right. So, and potentially finish 11-5, are the Patriots starting to regret the fact that they let Jimmy Garoppolo go to the 49ers?
No, I don't think so.
Not since Jimmy G blew out his leg or his ankle.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
But to say that, you think that would have happened in New England, though?
It wouldn't have happened in New England, but
that was just his luck. That was his luck of the draw. I don't know if it would have happened in New England. I mean, it could have happened anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So,
with
New England finishing 11-5 potentially this year, you know, I'm saying this with extreme sarcasm because imagine, I mean, teams, franchises like the Bengals, the Packers, which is what they would give for 11-5.
Not so much the Packers because they've experienced 11-5. I'm thinking the Bengals, the Brownies,
Cowboys, Colts,
who, by the way, are still mathematically alive.
We're going to talk about the Browns.
Yeah.
And the Bengals are still mathematically alive, too.
I'm eating all kind of words in reference to the Browns right about the minute. My goodness, they're looking really impressive this year. But is this, is this loss to Pittsburgh and going 11-5 potentially? Shoot, they could finish
9-7.
They could finish 9-7 potentially. You know, is this foreshadowing? You know, the fall of an empire. You know, the Rockefeller film that came out about a year ago, Death of a Dynasty.
Well, they need a quarterback. They need someone to step in for Brady's shoes. They needed to groom someone who could do that. Now, the problem is we don't know where they can find him because, remember, Brady wasn't highly drafted to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of where can you find this quarterback that they're going to need. And it really is a kind of a witch's cauldron of data that is very hard to examine.
I'll say this about the Patriots, because what it seems like to me is that they'll hit the restart button when Brady and Belichick retires, because I think they'll both go out at the same time.
Think so?
I think so. Yeah, I don't think so.
I think they will.
I think Belichick.
I don't think Belichick's going to go no further. That's what I'm saying.
Like, you know, because if I'm Belichick, I'm not. But I might want to last Brady, because in a way, it's like they're in each other's shadow.
Okay.
You know, and people are saying, well, Belichick, like Phil Jackson, was only as great as the great players he had around him. He hasn't like taken – right.
And remember when they all left after the second championship run, the second three-peat they had, they left after that.
Right. Correct. And Phil bailed on the Lakers after the Shaq and Kobe situation, and Rudy T had to come in. And he came back when Shaq and Kobe, you know, oh, not Shaq, but when Kobe and the Lakers kind of reincarnate, you know, rejuvenate themselves. But the same, I think, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, he might want to go off and, you know, kind of stand, you know, build his own legacy. You know, it is, you know, because people are wondering, you know, is the Belichick system, is it the system that made Brady, or is it the Brady that made the system?
Okay.
As far as the offense is concerned, because,
But does he really want to prove that, though? Because, I mean, this guy has nothing else to prove.
I mean, have we ever seen a team, you know, exert such dominance with no dominant receiver? You know, they're not known for their great running backs.
Right.
But they've never had that superstar receiver with the exception of Randy Moss, and they broke records.
Yeah.
You know, Randy Moss arguably, being one of the three greatest wide receivers that have ever caught a football.
Well, can't you argue that Gronkowski is a good
absolutely
a good wide receiver? Absolutely. Even though he's technically a tight end
when he's not hurt.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I mean, they're beating that guy up.
Yeah, he gets hurt because he gets the ball so many times.
Exactly,
and he gives his body 100%. He doesn't hold anything back when he's on the field.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah, if I'm Belichick, I guess for the ego boost or the legacy, you know, you may want to stick around for a little while, you know, see if the Belichick system is that invincible, you know, or is he just another Phil Jackson who, you know, the triangle worked, but the triangle may not. The same offense that the 2010 Lakers would have ran with Kobe, Gasol, and company, would that have worked in New York with Carmelo Anthony?
Well, the triangle worked because Michael Jordan bought into it.
Right.
If he didn't want to do it, then, you know.
Right.
He wasn't going to do it.
You're only as good of a coach as your team thinks.
Yeah, you're only as good as a coach if your team buys into your system.
And everybody who's played for Belichick has bought into his system.
Absolutely. Because we look at Julian Edelman. If you put Julian Edelman on the Bears, is he still Julian Edelman?
Congratulations to them, by the way.
They absolutely, just,
they
oh man,
their
they
first
are
NFC
Khalil Mack
championship since 2010.
I mean, my good, John Gruden has got to be like he has to get an award for like the executive of the year this year.
Yeah,
my goodness, GM status for the teams. You know what I'm saying? They have to probe his bank account and see if he's accepting checks from Jerry Jones and whoever owns the Bears. Because my goodness, you know, this man has really turned around franchises. If he's done anything this year. He's turned around. He's changed lives.
Forever.
Yeah.
Because Khalil Mack is something else, man.
My goodness, this man looks like the second coming to LT.
He has single-handedly changed the culture of that entire team. And that defense is back to being I'm telling you, if I'm the Saints or the Rams, you're going to end up seeing –
Well, one of those teams is going to see the Bears eventually.
Because the Bears are going to win they're going to win a playoff game,
right?
You know, and they'll be the 3 or 4 seed. So
right, and I speaking, you know, right back to my squad, it would be in our best interest to knock off the Ravens next week as well too.
Yeah,
it will be in our best interest because I don't want to see these guys again in the playoffs. I'm not going to lie to you, but I don't like mobile quarterbacks. I like mobile quarterbacks, but they don't play for my team. So
yeah.
I'm speaking from a straight fan.
You know what makes them so dangerous, though, is that they do everything so well. They play offense very well. They play defense very well. They are, and their special teams is very good.
Oh,
see,
man.
When you play very well on all three phases, it's very hard to beat you. It's very hard to beat them. And I watched that Kansas City game, and Kansas City won that game for 59 minutes and 56 seconds. And they could not get it the last 4 seconds. So, that's just the heart of the Chargers, though. And that's the thing, too. You can't teach that. They've got heart.
Right.
And it's a lot of teams out there that don't want to mess with the Chargers because of the heart that they have. I think they feel like they go in and they feel like, listen, we're the laughing stocks of the league. We get to this point every year and we kind of falter a little bit. And we ain't been in the playoffs in a while, too. So, listen, I think the Chargers, man, a lot of teams don't want to see them.
And we did that to Kansas City without our starting running back.
And right now the Chargers slated as the top wild card. They are visiting the Steelers. But, of course, that may change in the final 2 weeks. And with the Bears, they're facing the Vikings. But, again, that also may change. Vikings in at the 6th. Seahawks right now is the 5th. Although the Seahawks just lost to San Francisco 26-23 in overtime, that pushes them down to 8-6. But still, in that, they probably now just they might just swap with Minnesota for that 5th and 6th seed. That's where the Vikings, again, that tie with the Packers. That's where that's coming through. Getting back to the Bears for a moment, what is your overall opinion on Mitchell Trubisky?
I think he's doing well. I do. He's got the talent around him.
Do you feel comfortable with him leading your offense in the playoffs?
Yes. Yes, I do. I don't feel comfortable. I don't know if I feel comfortable with anybody else at the quarterback position. It really is because of his mobility. His ability to come out of the pocket and scramble out and run the football like he does. I think that that's the case. He's gotten so much better with passing. First year, he was kind of – it's kind of erratic at times, you know. He lacked accuracy downfield, but now you're seeing him, and now you're seeing his comfort level. Listen, I like Mitchell Trubisky, man. I like him. Second year in the league. Now, listen, is he? Do I expect him to go to the Super Bowl off of him? No, not
this year.
But with that defense that he has, and with the players that he have around here, Tariq Cohen, he's got a running game with Jay Howard. So the guys that he have around him, I can see him winning a playoff game. Ooh,
yeah, but don't sleep on him. But don't sleep on a good defense in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I could change defense. You know, offense.
They got the league leader in interceptions too, right? Eddie Jackson, out of Alabama. So
yeah, with a good offense, you know, you can out. You know, if you outscoring people, you know, you might win. That's the Kansas City Chiefs. You might win outscoring people, but you know, like, the Chiefs are known for putting up points and still losing.
Right.
And a side effect of the Steelers' victory, the Bengals have officially been eliminated.
So the Bengals have eliminated.
Bengals are out. So right now the Browns are the next team that's kind of hanging on by a thread.
They have a very winnable game.
Against the Bengals.
Against the Bengals, yeah. There you go. Okay, last question, and I guess we can move on here.
Yep.
Since the Bengals have been eliminated, what in the world do we do with Marvin Lewis?
We kick him to the curb and take Hugh Jackson with him.
He's got to go.
He's got to go.
Yeah, I agree.
He's got to go.
I agree.
Yeah,
that's all I got to say.
He's been somewhat consistent as far as making it to the playoffs to a certain degree, but you have delivered zero playoff victories.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to get some new blood in, and you got to figure out do we want to stick with Andy Dalton, or do we want to see if what else is out there in terms of the draft?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I agree. And it's like the Cowboys, you know. The Cowboys are kind of not really judged based on what they do in the regular season. Because I look at, you know, in the era of Dak Prescott that we're witnessing, he's on the way to third year in the league this year.
Third year.
Mm-hmm. And he will be making playoffs two of his 2 or 3 years he's been in the league thus far. So, you know, but we're looking at, can he actually go to the playoffs and get a W? Can he lead his team to the promised land?
It depends on his matchup.
All right, we are running out of time, but we still have a couple minutes, so we're going to do this next segment really quick. We're just going to ask our panelists for their impressions of something, and then we'll just go on to the final 60 seconds. First up, Daniel, let's ask you this. Should the college football playoff expand to 8 teams?
Yes, it should.
And why?
And the reason why is, I guess you can say in the case of Central Florida and in the case of all of these other teams, especially with Georgia, everybody has said, well, Georgia is probably considered one of the best 4 teams in the country. Okay, you get rid of that by just putting in 8 teams, right? Now, would that affect the New Year's 6? No, I don't think it will. I don't think you cut out of those scenarios, because you put it this way. You take 4 of those games and you make it your quarterfinal. You take the next 2 games, you make it your semifinal, and then you have your national championship. Now, if we're talking about extending the playoff for 1 week, that's another thing. But if we're talking about about teams that are deserving, really, on an honest tip, guys, there are 8 teams that are probably deserving every single year to get a chance at being a national champion. So I say you go to 8, but you stop it there. You stop it at 8.
Do you think the NCAA is afraid of parity?
No, I don't think they're afraid of parity.
Nah, they're afraid of losing money.
That's what they're afraid of.
That's what, they've never been afraid of parity. They're afraid of losing money.
Oh, okay.
Because right now, parity is just Alabama and Clemson.
Yeah.
That's right now is what our parity is.
Exactly.
So we could basically say, you know, let's just throw out all these playoff things and just put Alabama and Clemson in the national title game.
So you're saying, in so many words, the NCAA does not have a soul. They don't have souls.
They've never been accused of having one. No, they don't. No, they don't. It's a business, and as much as we like the sports, we like the competition, we should never forget that in the NCAA eyes, it's just dollar signs. And yep. Our needs just happen to coalesce and be synergistic. Each side gets what they want. The NCAA gets the money. We get basically talking about the joys of competition and which team is going to come out on top. And it's just purely, I won't say intellectual exercises, because a lot of time our emotions kind of get involved, but it's something, you know, basically the way it is, everybody wins. We see the competition. We enjoy the games. The NCAA gets our money. Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. I agree.
I guess that's a simplification of it.
Well, sometimes simple is best. It's Occam's razor, which is not the Gillette model that I'm getting for Christmas.
Yeah.
It's the simplest explanation is often the correct explanation. All right, well, now it's time for the last 60 seconds, and once again, Daniel's going to go first.
All right, thanks, guys. Listen, from the I just read this from the New York Times. Kudos to the city of Seattle. They have been awarded another franchise. Of course, they don't have the Supersonics no more, but they will be getting an NHL expansion team, and I believe they'll be starting in 2021 in the 2021-2022 season. The National Hockey, according to the New York Times, the National Hockey League's Board of Governors has unanimously approved a new franchise in Seattle, putting the league's 32nd team in one of the country's wealthiest and fastest-growing cities. The still unnamed team in Seattle arrives less than 3 years after the league awarded a new team in Las Vegas, whose inaugural 2017-18 season was a smashing success. Of course, they were in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yes.
You know, listen, this is something that I just loved when I saw this article, because that city deserves more than 2 franchises. Okay.
Well, I think they're going to call them the Sonic Supers. I think that's what their name is. Or they're going to call Oklahoma City and say, "Hey, you guys want a hockey franchise?"
Yeah, right. And I say this to say, bring Seattle basketball back too, because I think that they deserve that as well. If there were any basketball fans that were so loyal to their teams, it was that Seattle Supersonics fan. So, kudos to you, Seattle. Let's see if you can bring a basketball franchise back. And I'm done.
Absolutely. That's like, you know, given the Seattle hockey team is like, you asked them for Jordans, but you get some Adidas instead. You know they won the basketball team.
I thought you were going to say you're going to get Pippen instead. That's what I thought you were going to say.
Go, Leon.
Oh,
you
man.
Got 60.
All right. I wanted to touch on the Carmelo Anthony. So you go to the Lakers, they give it a chance.
Okay.
You know, this is something that Daniel sent the email in. Mm-hmm. We're going to discuss that. Yeah, he should go to the Lakers, they give it a chance. I mean, being that he's Carmelo,
yeah.
You know, we're talking about a perennial Hall of Famer. Some people may compare him to Bernard King, you know, as far as being like a great player, won nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with him going to Los Angeles Lakers, this will actually be giving Carmelo a chance to have an instrumental role in the team, because I believe he will, you know, he's going to come off the bench, but he will be, you know, with his offensive prowess. Hopefully he has a little bit of that left in him. I'm sure he does, because this reminds me of the Moneyball movie.
Okay.
Where, you know, you have the gentleman who found David Justice.
Yeah.
We remember who that guy is.
Yep. Yeah.
And brought the, if he had the, whatever little baseball he had left in him. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy ever saying this about Carmelo.
Use analytics.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, you know, I'm going to use the eye test. I believe if you bring Carmelo to the team, you bring Carmelo to our team, the Lakers, pair him with LeBron, you know, and put in, we're going to the playoffs, that's going to be a matchup ridiculous.
Well, the only question, well, there are two questions. Can Carmelo check his ego at the door, and can he at least pretend to play defense?
Yes and no.
Yes about the ego, no about the defense.
Absolutely. And not in the West. Oof. You know, have him guard a power forward or something like that. But, you know, but it's, you know, I believe that, you know, I guess for novelty reasons, and I don't want to go off novelty alone, but yeah, I believe that Carmelo would be an excellent addition to the Lakers, and it's a matter of time before it's going to happen.
All right. Well, guys, I happened to be on the road yesterday. I was in Jacksonville, Alabama. Not Florida. And Jacksonville State University, and it was interesting because Jacksonville State, I don't know if you guys remember, March 19th, this university was hit by an EF3 tornado, tore through campus, ripped a hole in the roof of the Pete Matthews Coliseum. That's where the basketball team was playing, and damaged a lot of other buildings. Well, driving through campus, you could still see the scars there. Oh, there's a lot of construction, a lot of teams getting rebuilt, but a certain instrument helpful in their recovery was debuted yesterday. Pete Matthews Coliseum back open for business in terms of basketball. They refurbished it, whole new court, new seating, everything had that new arena smell. And very interesting, the Jacksonville State, the first game was a women's basketball game against Georgia State. Georgia State just happened to be the team scheduled in for that opener, and the Jacksonville State Gamecocks did defeat Georgia State by 5 points in overtime. And I think it was a good, as much as I didn't want to see this, I think it would be a very good win for Jacksonville State. I'm glad they won it, if only because it's helping the healing process so they can get back to normal, and I don't know if they'll ever get back to totally normal, but at least the healing process is accelerated, it's underway, and that community is coming together to try and overcome what that tornado took from them.
Well said, John.
All right, well, as I said, we will not be here next week. We're going to take a little bit of a break, a Christmas break. We'll hopefully be back in 2 weeks, but if not, we'll be back in 3 weeks, as it'll be the NFL playoffs and the countdown to the Super Bowl. Looking forward to all that talk about what's going on with the Super Bowl coming right on our doorstep, and we may just try to find a random power place or just bring in a generator down to Centennial Park in the Atlanta Olympic Complex or in that Georgia World Congress Center and just set up shop and just go talk for about sports for about an hour, 2 hours, and see who wanders by. Might be fun. Might be interesting. Anyway, that's going to wrap us up for the last three guys to do a podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, our special guest, John Nelson from Georgia Public Broadcasting and the Atlanta United 2 media team. Hope to have him on later as we get closer to MLS 2019. That's going to wrap us up for
Leon Brown.
And
Merry Christmas, everybody. Daniel Bolton.
I'm John Morgo. I echo Daniel's wishes for Merry Christmas, whatever type of holiday you happen to celebrate here in this community. Again, tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell somebody you don't know, tell the guy who delivers your fish. We don't care, but still, listen to us. So we'll be back with you in 2 weeks, and for the last three guys to do a podcast, have a good night, everybody.